From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Those who escape the clutches of human trafficking often face a hurdle in building a new life, a criminal conviction that stems from the coercion they endured. Charges like trespassing or prostitution can block them from a job or safe housing or a scholarship. Lawyers from the Human Trafficking Prevention Project describe how they help victims clear their criminal records. Survivor advocate Shamir McKenzie tells us how she came to be trafficked and how charges arising from it have followed her.
Although I'm not physically in prison, I feel like I'm in prison every day of my life because a criminal conviction is a barrier to my restoration. It had impacted me in terms of getting access to housing, scholarships, employment, and my healing process.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. It doesn't need to be violent. It doesn't require crossing state lines or the nation's borders. It doesn't affect only women or only children or only immigrants. Human trafficking is the use of fraud, force, or coercion to exploit individuals for labor or sex. The National Human Trafficking Hotline reports that in the first 6 months of 2017, it received 259 calls about some form of human trafficking in Maryland. A survey by the National Survivor Network found that more than 9 out of 10 victims of human trafficking reported being arrested during the time they were being trafficked. More than half reported arrests for crimes other than prostitution. Criminal charges are often a stumbling block when it comes to seeking housing or employment or for custody or immigration. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a survivor who knows that firsthand. Right now, the director of the Human Trafficking Prevention Project at the University of Baltimore School of Law, Jessica Emerson, is here. Welcome.
Good morning, Sheila. Thank you for having us.
The project is a partnership with the Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service. Laurie Culkin coordinates that part of the project. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Sheila. Thank you for having us.
Jessica, I mentioned prostitution. What other charges are we talking about?
Sheila, we're talking about a whole host of other crimes. Obviously, we do see the prostitution convictions, but we also see crimes relating to drug possession, to trespassing, to fourth degree breaking and entering, which is squatting in an abandoned building, a whole host of crimes relating to surviving on the street.
And so what kinds of assistance can you offer when it comes to getting those charges removed from a criminal record?
So there's a couple of different things that we focus on the state-based level. If we're talking about a non-conviction, so someone was arrested and charged with a crime, but then they weren't convicted of that crime. So if we are looking at non-convictions for any state-based criminal charge, we can expunge those charges, which means to remove the record of the charge from the person's criminal record. That is available in small part for some convictions, but mostly it's available for non-convictions. For a set of nonviolent misdemeanor convictions, we can also do something that's called shielding. And the easiest way to understand that is like pulling the shade down over your criminal record. And so the conviction remains, but the record of the conviction is taken off of online sources like the Maryland Judiciary Case Search. And then, as you mentioned, for survivors who have prostitution convictions on their record, we can what's called vacate or set aside the conviction. And what that recognizes is that there was an error in the judgment when it was handed down by the judge. And had the judge known at the time they convicted that individual that they were a victim of sex trafficking at the time that they were arrested, they never would have actually convicted that person to begin with because they would have recognized legally that they weren't criminally responsible for their actions.
So legally, vacating a conviction implies a mistake was made.
Yes, it implies a mistake was made, and it puts the person in the position that they were before they were ever arrested. And I think that is the most transformative piece of vacature. Expungement is really helpful. Shielding can be helpful. But for survivors who were charged with prostitution at the time that they were convicted, it is like the justice system admitting we made a mistake.
Laurie, tell us about the collaboration between the University of Baltimore and the Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service.
First of all, I'll start off by saying Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service is the largest pro bono coordinator in the state of Maryland, and we serve Central Maryland as well as Western Maryland and some parts of the Eastern Shore. And our collaboration came to form when Jessica started her clinic over at the University of Baltimore School of Law in, I believe, 2015. Mm-hmm. She was just inundated with cases and realized that student attorneys couldn't take on all of the workload that needed to be done. So what Jessica and our directors over at Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service did was create this grant that expanded Jessica's project over to Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service so we could engage pro bono attorneys to take on vacatur, shielding, and expungement motions on behalf of survivors of human trafficking.
Tell me how clients find you.
Sure. So clients are often referred to us through substance abuse treatment programs, other community partners, LGBTQ service organizations, also other nonprofit law firms that deal with other issues but may identify someone as a potential survivor of human trafficking. Then they'll send a referral over to Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service. And actually, what's really encouraging, too, is we do get referrals from other clients that we've had. So when they have a positive experience working with an attorney, they'll refer their friends who are still, you know, struggling with these post-conviction issues over to us for assistance as well.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Jessica Emerson and Laurie Culkin of the Human Trafficking Prevention Project, a partnership between the University of Baltimore School of Law and the Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service. We're talking about offering trafficking victims the chance to clear their criminal records from convictions received while they were trafficked. Jessica, back in 2011, Maryland was the second state to permit survivors of sex trafficking to remove prostitution charges from their records. How does this process work?
So the process works, obviously, Laurie already explained how we get clients that come to us. What we do next is always get the client fingerprinted, because what we can see on Maryland Judiciary Case Search isn't always accurate. We figure out whether, you know, we can use expungement or shielding or vacature. When we focus on vacature, what we do is create a client affidavit, the client's sworn statement of what happened to them at the time that they were being trafficked. We break it down typically into, you know, what was going on in the client's life, what made them vulnerable to being trafficked. So helping people link vulnerability to trafficking with poverty, vulnerability to trafficking with a history of sexual abuse or with housing instability. Then we help the client kind of draw out the story of how they met their trafficker, what the trafficking experience was like, highlighting the experiences that they had with the criminal justice system, and then talking about where they are now, what difficulties the conviction has caused them in their lives.
This is all in a document. This is all written.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about a case, basically, that as far as the prosecutor is concerned and the court, is done. There was a conviction. It's over. And you come along and say, no, you have to read this complicated history of this person and what they were through. How does that work?
That works through a process of educating prosecutors and educating judges. When attention started coming to the issue of human trafficking, the focus was on foreign nationals. And then in the mid-2000s, anti-trafficking organizations started focusing on bringing awareness to the fact that U.S. citizens were being trafficked. And then we realized, after we established that human trafficking was actually happening, we realized that these individuals were being criminalized. And so it's really about educating the bar. It's about educating the court system and helping them understand that this is something that they're seeing, and that at the time that someone is convicted, sometimes prosecutors don't have all the information that they need. You mentioned the National Survivor Network survey. And within that survey, in addition to all the numbers that you cited around criminalization, there was also a question that asked about disclosure at the time of arrest or conviction. And 80% of the individuals who were surveyed said they did not disclose at the time that they were convicted. And so using that information to help prosecutors understand that at the time you prosecuted this case, and judges understand at the time you convicted this person, you didn't have the entire story. And we are providing that to you. And we are providing you with an opportunity to bring justice to somebody who has experienced victimization.
Some people might be skeptical that the charges are directly related to your client's situation of being trafficked. How do you make that case?
primarily we use the client affidavit. This is the client's story of what happened to them, and legally that is enough to affect the outcome of the case. We also support the client's story in whatever way we can. You know, if they have testified against their trafficker, we can provide that information. If they have had contact with a victim services organization, we provide letters of support that way. We focus on what the client's story actually says and figure out ways that we can support them and support the story that they provide to the prosecutors.
Laura, you train volunteer attorneys to take on these cases. They may or may not be familiar with human trafficking statutes. What do they need to know?
We really try and focus on trauma-informed care and also explaining what's called complex trauma. Complex trauma is what a lot of our clients face when they experience a traumatic event, and while they're processing that traumatic event, another traumatic event keeps happening, and it creates a compound effect. So, you know, someone who's experienced complex or compound trauma, you know, may come off as a client that seems difficult to work with, but these are really just manifestations of trauma.
Yeah, and I think when you start focusing on trauma as a perfectly normal response to an abnormal event, it kind of puts things in perspective and frames maybe behaviors that the attorney doesn't necessarily understand as, like I said, normal responses to what the client has been through.
Your project is called the Human Trafficking Prevention Project. I want to focus briefly on the prevention part. You're serving individuals with histories of trafficking. How does your work prevent trafficking?
So the reason that this project is called the Human Trafficking Prevention Project, first of all, obviously we work with survivors of trafficking, but we also work with people at high risk for being trafficked. So primarily individuals who are trading sex for money or something of value, who have not yet identified an incident that meets the legal criteria of trafficking. The reason we call it a prevention project is because we believe that somebody with a trafficking history, who has had experiences that meet the legal definition of trafficking, who also have criminal convictions or have a criminal record, are more likely to go on and be re-exploited because they can't get safe housing, they can't get the employment that they desire. And so when you focus on a survivor's criminal record, you are preventing re-exploitation. And when you work with a client who has not been the victim of human trafficking but has criminal charges on their record, you're preventing initial exploitation because you are allowing them to gain safer housing, get jobs, and exit the commercial sex trade if and when the time is right for them, which is nearly impossible to do when you have a criminal record.
Okay, we need to take a quick break here. I'm Sheila Cass. Laurie Culkin and Jessica Emerson of the Human Trafficking Prevention Project are here. They're going to stay with us. When we're back from the break, a survivor of sex trafficking escaped her captor, but a felony charge related to the trafficking followed her. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about helping victims of trafficking gain a fresh start. In addition to the abuse of trafficking, many survivors are arrested and convicted of crimes they're forced to commit by their traffickers, crimes such as robbery, drug dealing, trespassing, and prostitution. Those convictions follow a survivor as they try to move on with their lives. I'm speaking with Jessica Emerson and Laurie Culkin of the Human Trafficking Prevention Project, a partnership between the University of Baltimore School of Law and the Maryland Volunteer Lawyers Service. And also with us is Shamir McKenzie. She is the Anti-Trafficking Program Director for the Salvation Army of Central Maryland, as well as CEO of the Sun Gate Foundation and co-chair of the Victim Services Subcommittee of the Maryland State Human Trafficking Task Force. She is also a survivor of human trafficking. Shamir, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tell us the circumstances under which you were trafficked.
Those circumstances were definitely grueling.
The best way to wrap it up is in one word, torture.
How did it happen?
Torture in every sense of that word, torture. I was a college student on an athletic scholarship, a full athletic scholarship, where I injured my hamstring. And in my pursuit to complete my education, I met a man who said he will help me.
Let me just, I want to make sure I understand. When you injured your hamstring, your athletic scholarship evaporated?
Yes. And I met a man who said that he would help me, and that help that I received led me to be a victim of trafficking.
How long were you trafficked?
For 18 months.
And shortly after you escaped, you were arrested. What happened?
I was arrested and seen because there's this phenomenon called the bottom girl. I consider human trafficking to be a subculture that exists within our own American culture. And if you're not a part of this culture, you won't understand some of the terminologies that exist. So one thing that exists is called a bottom girl. And a bottom girl is the pimp's most trusted girl. She's also the one that's most manipulated and is also the pimp's scapegoat. So he forces her to engage in criminal activity when he sets up his criminal enterprise. So when law enforcement comes in, his hands are clean and she basically gets pinned with the charge. And that's what happened to me. I was forced to drive minors across state lines for illegal purposes to engage in prostitution, just like I was. So I was just driving, still engaging in prostitution like all the other victims. And I was seen as a criminal instead of a victim, where I took a plea to conspiracy to the Mann Act. And the Mann Act is a very old piece of legislation implemented in 1904 to address the issue of white slavery. But in today's society, in 2017, 2018, we are still using that law now instead of addressing white slavery to address the issue of human trafficking.
And so you took a plea to a violation because it was a way of avoiding jail?
Yeah. So Jessica and Lori talk about the complex trauma that victims go through. And so when you are exiting enslavement, right, that trauma doesn't just go away. You're still faced with that trauma. And the victim oftentimes doesn't even realize the trauma that they have endured. Because when I came out of trafficking, I thought I was perfectly fine. When my case manager suggested counseling, I told her, no, I don't need counseling. I'm perfectly fine. I know what happened to me. But when I went through 6 therapists and really saw the impact that my victimization had on me as a human being, it had on my brain, and it shaped the way I thought, the way I viewed the world, the way I viewed myself, I realized that counseling is really important. Therapy is really important because it helped me unpack the trauma. It helped me define who Shamir McKenzie is. And so when you first come out of that, that trauma is still present. It's really unclear that, okay, what direction am I going? Why do I have this charge? Do I want to go to jail? No. I was in jail for 3 weeks. And after being in jail, wondering, why am I the one here? What happened to the person who did this to me?
And the prosecutors didn't believe that you had been forced to do what you did?
Well, they said to me, we believe you are a victim, but you must be held culpable for the crimes you commit.
Jessica, you have represented Shamir, correct?
Yes.
What's your reaction to this case?
Unfortunately, my reaction is I'm not surprised. We hear this narrative from survivors at both the state and the federal level. We hear prosecutors who are able to say, yes, I understand that you are a victim, but I'm going to saddle you with this criminal record relating to your victimization anyways. The Human Trafficking Prevention Project obviously represents survivors at the state level, but we also represent survivors like Shamir who have been convicted on the federal level. And through a new initiative called the Human Trafficking Clemency Initiative, we also represent survivors who are currently incarcerated on the federal level, victims of sex trafficking who have been convicted of sex trafficking and other related federal crimes.
And in your case, Shamir, you told prosecutors that you had been trafficked.
Yes. They had the evidence. They have been watching my trafficker. Through my testimony, they were able to recover 2 other young ladies. They were quite aware that I was being victimized.
But often, is it the case that women who are charged with crimes do not say that they've been trafficked?
Yes, absolutely. Majority of survivors do not report that they have been victimized. But there's a big difference between someone who's standing in state court charged with a nonviolent misdemeanor and someone like Shamir who is facing federal prosecution and federal incarceration.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kass speaking with Shamir McKenzie, co-chair of the Victim Services Subcommittee of the Maryland State Human Trafficking Task Force. She's a survivor of human trafficking. Also with me is Jessica Emerson of UB Law School and Laura Culkin of the Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service. They lead the Human Trafficking Prevention Project. Shamir, how has that felony charge affected your life?
I feel like I'm living in invisible bars. So although I'm not physically in prison, I feel like I'm in prison every day of my life because a criminal conviction is a barrier to my restoration. It had impacted me in terms of getting access to housing, in terms of scholarships, in terms of employment, and my healing process. Every time I travel outside of the United States, upon entering the United States, I am stopped and questioned by Border Patrol. Because of my record. I remember burying my aunt in Jamaica, still mourning, coming back and being stopped. I remember going to Aruba in November, training some of their immigration and border patrol there and coming through again, still stopped. And this is the story of many other survivors. I know a survivor who was taking care of her mom and her mom passed away and she couldn't sign the lease because of her criminal record. And it's not like survivors can't afford it. So I remember my judge telling me, I don't want to see you in my courtroom again, but you're giving me a felony, which will eventually lead me back to your courtroom. Because if I can't get access to housing, employment, education, scholarships, then I have nowhere else to turn but go back to a place that I know I can get money.
And because this is a federal felony, mm-hmm. The kinds of relief that we've been talking about under state law, under Maryland law,
does not apply.
So what option do you have?
I have no options. So currently, one would say the only option is a presidential pardon. But here's why I'm not for a presidential pardon. A presidential pardon is you saying, I committed a crime. I did something wrong. Please forgive me. And it totally negates the fact that something was done to me. That someone took advantage of my vulnerability, and that's what put me in the position that I was in. So if you have a victim who has been victimized, how can you say to this victim, okay, I'm apologizing for my victimization? It doesn't add up. So what I feel our laws need to change to really understand trauma, to understand the impact of trauma on the brain, and to understand that the real perpetrators here are not the victims, but are the traffickers, are the buyers who are engaged in this criminal activity. We know as human trafficking.
Is there any movement at the federal level to do the kind of work you're engaged in here in Maryland?
There is. There is a group of activists who have worked together throughout the country who are focusing on getting a federal vacature law passed. And the reason that this type of legislation is essential is exactly what Shamir just said. Her only option is to ask forgiveness for something that she wasn't criminally responsible for in the first place.
Laurie, in addition to work on vacating criminal convictions, the Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service can connect clients to other legal services, right?
Yeah. So the Human Trafficking Prevention Project does focus on expungement, shielding, and vacatur petitions for survivors. But in addition, in our intake process, we also screen survivors for other legal needs. Because when survivors are going through this exploitive relationship, a lot of times they come out with other collateral legal issues such as back taxes, also family law issues. If a survivor has a child with their trafficker or, you know, with someone else, they often will give custody over to a relative. So we'll help them try and do a custody modification. And in addition to that, we also do housing law, public benefits, and other civil legal matters to help survivors back on the track to moving on with their lives.
Shamir, how did you find the courage to tell your story?
My faith in Jesus Christ and counseling is what really helped me to see that I am more than a victim, because I don't even consider myself a survivor. I consider myself a liberator, one who has broken free from the chains of her past and is determined to make a difference in the lives of others. So this is not even about me. This is about I share so that someone else doesn't have to walk in the shoes that I've walked in, so someone else doesn't have to feel the pain, so someone else doesn't have to be faced with rejection from employment and housing and education, and so someone else could go through their healing process a little easier.
I'm grateful to all of you for walking us through this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shamir McKenzie is Anti-Trafficking Program Director for the Salvation Army of Central Maryland, which runs a safe haven for victims of trafficking called Catherine's Cottage. She is a survivor of human trafficking. Jessica Emerson is director of the Human Trafficking Prevention Project at the University of Baltimore School of Law. She's lobbying for a change in state law to expand the list of nonviolent trafficking-related convictions that can be vacated. Laurie Culkin is coordinator of the project for the Maryland Volunteer Lawyer Service. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we will link to the Human Trafficking Prevention Project. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for being with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.